Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. This is Dr. Morgan. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Isn't it absolutely amazing what God has designed in the human body? You realize you have everything you need to heal with. You may not believe that, but you do. But how do you tap into that? Well, pretty much every good chemical reaction is going to take place in the presence of water. I can't even count on two hands the number of people that I see, just maybe over a 2 to 3 day span, that are dehydrated. It's become a chronic epidemic proportions. Let's go to the phone lines real quick, and I'll come right back to this topic. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. God bless you and your program, and thank you for all that you do for us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for your blessing. God bless you, too.
Oh, thank you, sir. My son has a bad trigger finger. Well, we looked it up. Everything fits the description of it. And we also looked up exercises, lemon juice. I know you would say lemon juice. We've been doing some of that. He's been putting olive oil on it, and I've been suggesting castor oil, too. But anyway, we wanted to call and ask you and see what you would recommend other than what we've been doing.
Iodine.
Iodine?
Iodine, yes.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
And I'm just vaguely remember reading the article, but they showed such a higher occurrence of having a Dupuytren's contracture or a trigger finger just with an iodine deficiency. Now, that's the sort of thing that you kind of have to play with. Everybody is unique and different. So one person may get there off 12 milligrams of iodine. Another person, they may have to take 25 milligrams of iodine to make that go away.
Okay.
Did you
I remember how you said to test to see if you're deficient for it, but I haven't thought about that for that. So I would
That would be easy to do if you just took a 2% iodine tincture, you know, that has that little plastic wand where you can put it right over a scrape or a scratch or a cut.
Yes, sir.
I mean, people still call that stuff monkey blood, but that's what I would probably call mercurochrome. But if you rub it right over that area of the trigger finger, so let's just say that your son rubs that iodine solution directly on the trigger finger area, and then he just starts counting the hours. And so what are you going to say if it dissolves, I mean, if it's completely absorbed and the color disappears by the six-hour mark? That would be a clue that he's probably low in iodine. I'm not saying it's an accurate test. Probably the most accurate test is where they give you some iodine and they try to capture what comes out in the urine.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I mean, he could rub that iodine tincture on there, just see what happens. But it's really interesting what happens to the tendons of the fingers when you are low in iodine. They tend to lock up.
Yes. It locks up bad and hurts him. Now, he's been doing the stretches, but he was pulling them back really, really hard, and I was thinking that would make it more inflamed.
Well, what if he has some scar tissue adhesions, and he's got some, and I know this is kind of crude the way I'm saying it, but what happens is those tendons become so sticky, almost like there's a layer of glue or Velcro. And so when he bends that finger backwards, he's trying to, like, break that stuff up so he can regain the use of his hand.
Okay.
Personally, I mean, if I put myself in his shoes, I would not like this at all. Going, hey, I can't even do my job because I can't unlock my finger.
Yes, yes.
So I'm quite sympathetic.
When he doesn't unlock it, it's quite painful.
Yeah, and you know what? If he stretches his finger, there is a technique called friction massage. He could probably look that up, but I would probably do friction massage of those tendons. And you know what? This is not a fun deal to deal with, but you got to almost kind of stretch it, smash it, bend it, rub it, whatever you got to do to break up all those Velcro glue-like duct tape adhesions. Because unless you can get it to start slipping You know what? If what would happen if you held two ice cubes in your hands right now and tried to rub them together? It'd be super slippery, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Or if I tried ice skating with tennis shoes on the ice, I would probably slip. But that's the way that you want those tendons to be in your hand. You want them to be so slippery and so smooth, there's nothing that's causing sticky adhesions. But that's what he's got. He's probably got sticky adhesions along those tendon sheaths. But you got to break it up, and you got to rub that stuff out to make it go away, and that takes time.
Okay. Since we looked that up, I saw something that kind of related to my fingers. My last three fingers got caught up in a vacuum cleaner belt that I was putting back on. And
you mean your fingers got smashed between the belt and the pulley?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I like to not got my fingers back out from underneath it, but I did, and yes, it hurt, and it healed up and all, but then later years, oh, man, I have been having trouble with it.
Well, see,
so
there,
I'm starting to do that, too.
You're making, you're making a really, really good point, and so when you got your fingers smashed between the pulley and the vacuum cleaner belt, it injured your hand, and evidently you had some scar tissue and some adhesions, and it kind of wrecked them. So even a normal person needs therapy after an injury, right?
Oh, yes, but it's kind of iffy if you call me normal, but that's okay.
Wait a second. I'm not really sure what comment you just made, but I'm going to pretend that we're talking about, hey, you know what we used to do? This was probably 30-something years ago. And this is a device, and I don't know that I see many people use them, but I'm telling you, I think they're fabulous. It's called a hand paraffin bath. What it looks like, It looks like a slow cooker, and it's got wax with mineral oil in there, and some people use other types of oil. But I think it's heated to exactly 126 degrees Fahrenheit. That is not Celsius. That would burn you. But at 126 degrees Celsius, you just dip your hand down the wax, and you pull it back out. And what it does is it leaves a thin, waxy, oily layer. And then you dip it down again. And you keep doing it till you get sufficient layers. And what we would do in college is just wrap them up with saran wrap and put a towel around there and just let the heat do its deep tissue work. And I'm telling you what, after doing that, I bet you anything we could probably break up some of those adhesions after doing the hand paraffin bath.
Wow. I had a friend that did that on her feet, but I hadn't thought of that. But now that you said that, would that, I know I'm not going to say it right, but the bentonite clay, would that help also?
Well, bentonite clay is like awesome stuff because what it does is it pulls out toxins.
Okay, so a little bit of doing all that stuff should make us right as rain.
Right as rain.
And
you know what?
We need more of that.
We should stop what we're doing right now. We should start praying for rain, asking God to bless us with some moisture, right?
Yes.
Hey, I found a good deal for you. I'm on eBay right now. It looks like a slow cooker that you would cook a ham in, but it's really a paraffin spa bath for your hands or your feet. It's only $57.
I think I could do it in the double boiler.
You know what? I think you're right. Just put your thermometer in there and hit 126.
And essential oils like
Oh my goodness! I've got a clever girl on the radio with me.
Okay.
Who do you think you are, finding all these healing remedies to add to the paraffin to make it even more successful and better?
We listen to Roy Morgan every Saturday.
Well, but I didn't come up with the essential oils. That was your brainchild. That's a good idea, though.
Well, no. God's blessed us with your knowledge, and we thank you very much.
You know what I would do if it were me? The two oils I thought of, and I realize this is going to sound kind of weird, but I would probably put 1 to 2 drops of what's called tea tree oil.
That's what I was trying to think of.
Oh, well, you did great. And some of the reasons I like tea tree oil, if I have a person that comes in my office and they say, Dr. Morgan, I can't raise my arm, I can't raise my shoulder, and you feel of it, it's like crunch, crunch, crackle, crackle, snap, pop, and you just know that when they try to raise that arm, it's like calcium deposits rubbing up against each other like grit or sandpaper. So tea tree oil, sometimes it really helps resolve that. And then I'm a huge fan of clove oil, but I'd probably, if you had like that hand paraffin bath, besides the essential oils like thieves that you mentioned, I'd probably put about two or three drops of tea tree oil and then maybe a drop of clove oil. You got nothing to lose. I don't think that could hurt.
No, and it'll make the house smell wonderful.
You know what? That's what I think. I have a diffuser at my office, and half the time I plug that sucker in, I just like straight tea tree oil. I think it smells great.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Thank you for your phone call.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, this is Health Essentials. What I'm going to do is I'm going to switch gears here because I find this information so interesting and so intriguing. Because sometimes we ask ourselves, how did we get in this mess that we're in right now? What happened to people having radiant health and being hardier and stronger and resilient? And let me express it to you this way. When you're living in the year 2022, you're going to have plenty of opportunities to heal from either injuries. You're going to come in contact with people that sneeze. You know what? The truth of it is, somebody could be walking from the parking lot, have a sneezing, coughing spell. They cover their hand and wipe their nose with their right hand, and guess what they do when they walk around the corner? Hey, Bill, great to see you. Let me shake your hand. They don't think anything of all the sneezing and coughing and hacking in their hand as they extend it to you for you to touch. And then what do? You have to scratch your nose because it itches. Or you got a piece of dust in your eye and you rub the corner of it. Well, guess what you just did? You just gave yourself a mega dose of viruses and toxins. Anyway, so I want to read this to you right here. And this is about a neurologist by the name of Dr. G. Robert DeLong of Duke University Medical School. Well, in the year 1989, a pediatric neurologist, Dr. G. Robert DeLong of Duke University, he visited this rural Chinese province called Xinjiang. I'm sure I'm butchering that. I'm sorry. The reason he visited, you'll figure it out, as a neurologist, he's interested in why this unique region in China, they had such a severe issue with mental retardation. I'm not talking about it being a rare occurrence that you would see a person that suffered from mental retardation. I'm talking about severe epidemic proportions where it's so common that it's just a way of life. Now, besides the mental retardation, this particular province, guess what they also had? A very high amount of miscarriages. So you know what? Even if this story about China and these people suffering horrible health problems and maladies and diseases and miscarriages doesn't relate to you, well, what if you have a hard time becoming pregnant? Or what if your children are suffering on one level or the other? Well, this might be important to you. And so they experienced also this Xinjiang province, lots of miscarriages. They had a very high infant mortality. You know what that means. The children just didn't survive being infants. They didn't make it into toddlers and young children. Dr. DeLong noticed there was lots of children that had stunted growth. They were so much shorter than what they should be. There was a lot of deafness, which means you can't hear. There were a lot of stillborns. A lot of kids, even if there wasn't a miscarriage, when the child was born, it was a stillbirth. Okay? Are you with me on that? Dr. DeLong noticed that some of the fully developed adults, they appeared as small as children. Some of the five-year-olds, they looked like they were toddlers. According to DeLong, the children were truly in sad shape. Some showed extreme mental retardation, and they couldn't walk, stand, or even sit. Oh, my goodness. This story's not going well. Even the ones without severe signs of physical debilitation, they were slack and dull-eyed. That's not a slur at all. It's just the way it is. Now, also, their livestock, in a very similar way, they were feeble. The livestock, when they did reproduce, they produced stillborn offspring, which what all that did was it left this Xinjiang province extremely poor and destitute. What do you do when you don't have enough food to feed your children? Since this area of China had been regarded as inhabited by village idiots since Marco Polo's time in the 1200s, the people had been written off. Iodized salt, you know, getting salt that had iodine added to it, it wasn't an option, because many of the cultural and the political factors included a great fear of salt. And you know what? That's not much different than today. I talk to people all the time. They are absolutely terrified what is going to happen to them if they even look at salt. So Dr. DeLong and his colleagues in China, they explored and rejected many solutions for getting iodine into the people. And of course, I'm kind of cutting to the chase on this. This is the reason I'm talking about this Xinjiang province, is because all these problems, from miscarriages to high infant mortality, stunted growth, deafness, stillbirths, lots of mental retardation, kids that couldn't walk or stand or even sit, this is all an iodine deficiency. Kind of made me, when the woman called a while ago about the trigger finger, you think about iodine. So finally, Dr. DeLong, after thinking of all the different ways they could get iodine to the people, they came up with a brilliant idea. He looked at the irrigation ditches that they would use for the crops, and he wondered to himself if iodine could just be dripped into the water. That way, the plants would absorb the iodine, and the animals would eat the plants, and the people on top of the food chain would get enough iodine that way. Does that make sense? Really, it's a brilliant plan. He's just putting iodine in the water. The plants absorb the water. The animals eat the plant. The people eat the plants and the animals, and they get iodine that way. Well, how do you do this? Now, I have a picture. I can't show it to you because it's radio, but it's really something else here. So they had to be very practical. They had to think very, very low tech, because this is like a super, super poor, destitute part of the world. So Dr. DeLong and his Chinese colleagues, they rigged a common 55-gallon oil drum. I'm hoping they washed it out from oil and diesel fuel before they used it. And so what they did was they put this oil drum on top of a rickety bridge. I'm looking at the bridge. I'm telling you, it's rough. The bridge itself looks like it could hold one, maybe two people walking side by side crossing an irrigation ditch. Now, to me, the irrigation ditch that I'm looking at, it is very, very straight and narrow, which means they probably dredged it and they made just a, I mean, it looks like a man-made irrigation ditch. But the thing of it is, on either side of the irrigation ditch up to the edge, I mean, plant life is incredible. There are a ton of trees growing, bushes, shrubs, flowers, fauna. So they got water, which you realize water is essential for life. How can you make life or healing happen without water? So what they did was they took this 55-gallon drum, they attached some intravenous tubing and clamps, and they kind of rigged it so they would have a steady drip into the irrigation canal or the water. Next, they filled the drum with potassium iodate, and they measured how much iodine turned up in the downstream villages. Kind of like when they test the sewage treatment plants now in different parts of America for monkeypox and for polio and for Ebola. I made that last one up. That's not true. But they might test the water to see if there's a presence of polio. Okay? That's what they're finding now. So they measured how much iodine turned up downstream. Now, when they were ready, now this is crazy. When they were ready to start dripping the potassium iodate into the canal of the water used for irrigation, they had to hire a local villager to guard the barrel from theft. Okay? I know it sounds crazy. You're thinking, if you truly knew what this iodine solution would do to all the people, why would you steal it and thus prevent the people from getting well? So as the iodine ran out, the villagers continued to refill the barrels. And so at night, there was a guard from the village. He just slept on the bridge at night, rolled up in a blanket. I mean, somebody had to protect the iodine. Well, let me tell you what happened a year later. Here's the punchline. I could title this piece, How to Drop Infant Mortality by Half. So a year later, they did another survey. Guess what? Infant mortality dropped by half. Sheep production, which is one of their livestock or farm animals, it increased by 40%. Later measurements showed that the average 5-year-old, instead of looking like a baby, their height increased by 4 inches. Do you get what I'm saying here? What if you have a child that's very, very small and their height is just not even close to average? Well, what they did in China was they put iodine in the irrigation canals, and all of a sudden, within a year, their 5-year-old's height increased by 4 inches. To me, that is huge. I wonder what it was in 8-year-olds and 14-year-olds. Anyway, now get this right here. No one's trying to make a joke. The term IQ stands for intelligent quotient. And yes, they do have time-tested, honored IQ tests. I'll let you debate how accurate they are or not, but they're just trying to determine how intelligent is a human being. And so after a year of dripping iodine into their irrigation canal, the average intelligence of children born after the irrigation project, it increased by 16 IQ points. And folks, that's huge. Could you imagine if you had an IQ of 85, which would be very, very low, and all of a sudden now your IQ is 101? Well, you'd be super smart at that point. They said that stillborn animals and miscarriages were reduced by 50%. All right, you with me on that? By the year 1997, the Thrasher Foundation, the Joseph P. Kennedy Foundation, and the Kiwanis International, they jumped in to underwrite the irrigation project. So iodine dripping is now implemented for 2.6 million Chinese that live in the Xinjiang province. So they 13.5 tons of iodine have been dripped into the villagers' water. The cost for such a life-saving, life-altering project, okay, for a year, less than 6 cents per person. Can you believe that? That's all it costs to rewrite the lives of people who have been written off for 5 centuries. In Kazakhstan, a country located in Central Asia, public health officials try hard to raise awareness about the importance of iodine when it comes to the topic of intelligence. What nation or country doesn't want its population to have great intelligence? They put up billboards where they talk about iodine. They have pamphlets that are written up, and they're distributed and studied by 7th graders. Even the Iodine Man superhero cartoon character urges children not to be stupid. Eat iodine salt. Can you imagine? They tell their people, don't eat iodized salt, because some people are terrified of it. But they're trying to tell them, you got to get iodine from some source. And, you know, Kazakhstan is probably landlocked. I haven't looked it up on the map. But it's not like they live on the coast where they get to have fresh seafood or sea vegetables like kelp. Okay. What difference does it make, 15 to 16 points in IQ? What kind of difference does that make? There's a country in Africa called Zaire. Public health workers traveled to remote areas where mental retardation was so devastating that they felt the best way to get iodine to the population. And by the way, you can pick up what I'm saying. Where there's a lot of mental retardation, they want to give the element iodine to the people. All they have to do is consume it. I mean, I guess you could look at it in a bottle, or you could hold the bottle, but that didn't quite do it. You could actually read about the iodine, but that doesn't do it either. You could say you want to take iodine, and one day you're going to get around to it, but guess what? That doesn't do anything at all. So what they did in this in Zaire is just, they just went ahead and injected the iodine directly into a base of poppy seed oil. In one case, they have this case study right here. There's one adult man whose IQ was estimated to be in the low 50s. That's pretty bad, folks. Maybe a head of cabbage is about the same IQ. That's just not good. He was so mentally impaired from an iodine deficiency that he could not understand or conceptualize that he needed to wear clothes. And so here we have an adult man that can't even have the sense to put clothes on. Now, his aging parents were so ashamed that they had to keep him locked in the house so as to not upset the other villagers. After the public health workers gave him an injection of iodine mixed with poppy seed oil, he actually learned something, to take care of his clothes and keep them on. And then he was able to get a job loading bricks onto a truck. Now, I realize what you're thinking. That doesn't sound too impressive, but to go from basically being a village idiot or mental retardation where you can't keep your clothes on in public, now you can keep your clothes on and you can get a job loading bricks. Well, guess what he was able to do? This not only helped the family finances, but they're also they probably were in good standing with other villagers because their son wasn't running around without clothes on all the time. So yeah, there is a major push on trying to restore awareness of iodine in these countries where it's so deficient. Somebody was just trying to call. If you want to call and ask me a question, this program is Health Essentials. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I have a quote for you from Dr. Jorge Fleckus, MD, MPH. He says, we know from world studies that if you give iodine during pregnancy, the babies that come out are usually 20 to 30 points higher in IQ than their parents. Oh no, that's awesome. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, thanks.
So, I have two questions. One is, I've got a friend who has those fungus toenails.
Yeah.
How do you get rid of that? Or
well,
cure it, or whatever
you're,
term
you're going to have to do it in steps. Number one, fungus grows to where there's very low levels of oxygen. So I know that we understand that the big toe or the little toe or the middle toe is probably the furthest possible structure away from the heart. So when your heart makes a beat or it contracts, it probably takes a full 22 seconds to get oxygen-rich blood from the heart down to that toe.
Right.
And so one of the ways to completely cure the toenail fungus is you got to drastically improve blood flow and oxygen.
Okay.
And so let me give you some ideas.
Okay.
If a person's not used to moving their body very much, and let me start over. I'm going to go backwards a little bit. If this was the year 1922 and I woke up at 4 in the morning, my father would say, son, it's time to milk the cows. But I might have to go out there and get the cows and bring, you know, lead them into the stalls where I could milk them.
Right.
But if we went back 100 years ago, guess how many miles the average person probably just walked and moved every day? Probably close to 17, 18, 19, something like that. But that's just the way it was. Before we had, cars and computers where we sat down all day long, we walked everywhere. So those people did not have trouble with toenail fungus. The next part of anything that improves blood flow and circulation is going to be the ticket. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut to the chase and tell you, there was a study that I read recently. They used what was called ozonated sunflower seed oil. So just think in your mind, there's this huge rolling valley that's got all these sunflowers growing. They're all pointing toward the sun. Well, when they harvest those, they're going to squeeze the seeds and get the oil out of them. But if they can ozonate them, which what they do is they just take oxygen and ozone and they run it through this little bitty aerated head for several days into the oil, and it becomes like a thick, almost like a thick salve or a paste. Well, so I mentioned circulation, and you already figured out that if you increase your circulation, you get more oxygen and nutrition, and you also get more white blood cells that can actually kill and eat the fungus if you can improve blood flow. Well, one of the ways of cheating is just rubbing what's called oxygen-rich ozone oil directly on the toenails.
Okay.
So until a person's circulation improves, we could always get some ozonated oil. It almost looks like a jelly-like, Vaseline-like salve. It actually kind of looks like Vaseline, but when you open the lid, you're going, oh my goodness, this stuff smells strong like ozone. It really does.
Okay.
And so that's one way that does it. The other way that we have to dress, and it just can't be overlooked, if a person is eating food called highly refined sugar and junk food, it's just nearly impossible to overcome the fungal infection because you can't kill it and feed it at the same time.
That's true.
Well, I've tried. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
I could have a failure case. I could say, ma'am, I know everything about toenail fungus. We're going to get rid of that real quick. What I want you to do is eat 13 Twinkies a day and drink a six-pack of Coke and report back to me in 2 weeks. Well, I'm going to have another failure on that deal.
Yeah.
Now, can I give you a side topic here?
Sure.
The drugs that are currently used to treat toenail fungus, oh my goodness. I don't know if there's a class of drugs that'll wreck a person's liver faster. And yeah, I realize a person can go get a prescription, but man, those drugs are hard on the body.
I've heard that before. Well, of course, I listen to you a lot. And
well, you have to decide if you believe it or not.
Well, and, you know, it just seems like all these drugs that are out there, you know, they help one thing and they mess up something else.
Well, quite often that is totally true. And a person says, you know what, I didn't bargain for this. I didn't know that I was going to have this problem when I took the drug. The doctor never told me that.
No. I had a family member who died months after taking, and this is years and years ago, but taking cholesterol medication.
Oh, dear.
You know, never had a problem, and then, so, anyhow.
And so, but that was your relative's timeline. They were doing really well until they took that drug, and all of a sudden their health went downhill.
That's it.
Oh,
exactly.
Boy. And so, these are a few ways right here. Can I give you a few more pointers?
Sure.
I really think that one of the best ways to improve circulation of the toe is just walk barefoot as much as a person can. So I realize the world we're living in, but like in your situation, what would prevent you from sitting on the front row of church tomorrow and leading singing barefoot? Just give me one reason why that wouldn't work.
That might be interesting to try.
I think we should. Report back to me after you do it. But if you had at least one day a week that you just did not wear shoes, like if you knew you were going to be home, just walk barefoot everywhere. And it's been shown over and over. If you want to grow new blood vessels and arteries and veins and nerves in your feet, then walk barefoot.
Okay.
Unless you're like me, you're good at
several times.
Unless you're like me, you're good at kicking thistles and sharp barbs and shoving them in your toes. I had to pick some out last week. But if you could walk barefoot, that really seems to help. And then the other thing is sandburrs
that cause a problem.
Oh, my God. Wait, did you say sandburrs? Are you calling from East Texas or somewhere else? Because we don't have any here in East Texas.
Yes.
I think they are everywhere, aren't they?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
The other thing that I would say is the type of material that you wear on your shoes, I think, is important also. And so there's a type of sock called a wool sock. That's W-O-O-L.
There you go.
But wool is absolutely the best material to wear if somebody has toenail fungus. Mm. It's a natural fiber. The stuff is awesome. So if you can go from synthetic poly ethylene glycol. I just made that up. That's antifreeze. I didn't mean that. But you realize they have socks that are made of synthetic fibers, right?
Right, yes, sir.
But if you could get some from natural, cotton can work too, but wool is by far and away the best technique of all time.
Okay.
There's a type of shoe that they make. I think the last pair I saw on the internet, it was like $37.98, so it's not super expensive. That was $38, not $38 million, by the way, in case you didn't know the math on that.
Well, you know, with inflation.
You know what? We wake up and all of a sudden a pair of tennis shoes costs $38 million. That's what I call significant inflation.
Yeah, that is true.
I asked a gentleman yesterday that's a financial, probably a genius, and I said, are we in a recession? He kind of laughed at me. He said, yeah, and it's going to get a lot worse. I said, okay. But the type of shoe that can be really, really good to improve circulation in your feet is called a zero-drop shoe.
Okay. I've never heard of that.
Okay. It's a type of shoe, and if you look it up, I think you'll go, oh, well, that's like a simple idea. That's the only thing I can talk about is simple stuff. Now, I'm going to play the other side of the equation here, which is going to make me sound like I'm invalidating my wool sock. But they do sell a type of a sock called a compression sock.
Yes.
And there are times that a person really should have a compression sock on because their lymphatic circulation is so poor. And so one of the ways that you know that your lymphatic circulation is getting poor is the color of your toenails begins to change to kind of a yellowish or a yellow-brown. It goes from the nice pink clear color, like if you look at your nail beds right now on your fingers,
right,
and they're pink. So when you start seeing your toenails start to yellow or turn darker, that is a clear sign, in my mind, that you've got very poor lymphatic circulation. So for some people, if they could start walking every day, and you know, one of the big keys is just not sitting down so much. Aren't you thankful to God that you don't have a job that requires you to sit all day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or something like that, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
So they sell compression socks, and these compression socks, they're graded, and some of them can squeeze your legs with it about 10 millimeters of mercury pressure, kind of like, think of blood pressure cuff, just very light pressure.
Right.
Some of them can go up to 40 and 50, so I would just start out with the ones that go between 10 to maybe 15, or maybe 10 to 20 millimeters.
Uh-huh.
And you can get the full-length ones that go all the way up, basically to the knees, or they cover the calves.
Right over the calf, yeah.
Yeah.
My father had those.
So if you had a job that required you to sit and, say, drive all the time, like going from one place or one location to the next, the mm-hmm. compression I started calling them stockings. I'm not talking about Joe Namath and pantyhose here.
There you go.
Although the moment he started wearing pantyhose, his passes became much more accurate. I don't understand the medical, but anyway. But if you do that, all of a sudden you'll have much better blood flow to the feet, or your friend will.
Yeah.
Because I know you're asking for a friend.
I got friends coming in tomorrow.
Okay. Well, that could be a different topic, but you're asking for a friend.
Yeah, a different friend, but
yes,
yeah,
a different friend. And so those are some ideas right there. And if you just set your mind, so the other thing that I really like to correct this, if somebody could just do body weight squats, it's just absolutely one of the best things to increase the strength and circulation of the legs.
Okay. It doesn't mess with the knees?
No, it really doesn't. I mean, okay. I understand there's going to be some people that have had like a knee replacement and the knee just will not bend that far. Well, that's a different circumstance.
Right.
But one of the ways to correct knee problems is by getting the legs stronger and correcting the mechanics of the foot and the legs.
Perfect. Okay.
Have you thought about running a marathon?
Yeah, to the mailbox and back.
In the mailbox is how far from your front door?
Not far enough.
Okay, we'll go with that.
And keto has been helping, by the way. Started again.
Yeah, and you know what? Well, that's a really good plan. You're trying to change your metabolism. You want your body to starve your body of a lot of the sugar that it's used to. and right. give it a little bit more rich fat.
That's right, yeah. And my next question is, what, they're talking about monkeypox being, of course, the new epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
What are you suggesting to...
Well, first thing is just don't hang out at the zoo. I mean, I know that's obvious, but, you know, you can't be sharing your bananas with the primates. Wait, what was your question?
What are we doing to prevent monkeypox, or what should we as individuals do?
Okay, this is not meant to be a flippant comment, but if you statistically look at who's getting the monkeypox, it's people that are engaging in behaviors that are very perverse.
Oh, okay, I had no clue.
So
just think
the term homosexual activities.
Got it.
No one's picking on anybody. It's just the way it is. If you do that, there's a good chance you're going to get just about every disease known to man.
Got it. Okay.
And so if you were to stay away from, like, San Francisco, that might be, like, a good call.
Got it.
I was really joking about going to the zoo because did I ever tell you that story? When I was in elementary school, we would go on field trips. And one time we went to the Dallas Zoo. And this small monkey, it couldn't have been more than 10 pounds, maybe 15 tops, he reached out to lovingly, he wanted to hold my hand. Well, as I reached out my hand, being not the so educated person when it comes to monkeys, I was probably like 10 years old.
Right.
The monkey pulled me so hard, I think I still have two dents in my skull from where my face hit the bars on the cage. And so I learned that a teeny tiny monkey could rip your arm off. So,
holy cow.
I think that's right. A cow would be much easier to get along with.
And we have those in East Texas.
Yeah, well, you don't have to worry about cowpox right now. It's not going around.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but from what I can tell, they're picking up some monkey pox in these large urban areas. And they're finding it in the sewage treatment plants or in the raw sewage. So, and I'm not trying to be gross or crude here, but you realize when somebody goes to the bathroom and they push down on the lever to remove the waste from the toilet, it's going to go somewhere.
Right.
And for all I know, maybe it's pumped 18 miles away to where the main sewage treatment plant is, where they try to... clean and repair the water to where they can put it back into the city pipeline again, which personally, I am not drinking city of San Francisco water. It ain't gonna happen.
Exactly.
I wonder if they sell kombucha at the health food store. I might have to go with that, or bottled spring water from Arkansas or Oklahoma or something, or Texas.
Something.
Yeah, but you know, these things that are really... These diseases, you know, when I read this week that polio is starting to make a comeback, and I'm going, what are we going to do? Well, what I want you to do is use the wits that God's given you. You need to steer clear of areas. I remember from my studies of polio a long time ago, they could show how it would always flare up during the summertime. Not so much during the wintertime, not the spring, not the fall, but always the summer. And they would notice that when you would hear the music of that van driving down the street and the children would chase it with their money, waiting for it to stop, they would notice that was where the huge outbreaks of polio would occur, where there's very, very high sugar consumption. So I don't think most people think sugar causes disease, but in this case, what if high consumption of refined sugar is just enough to suppress the function of your immune system? So if you come in contact with monkeypox or polio, your body just really can't respond in a very robust manner, which is what we want your body to do.
Right.
Now let me switch gears just for a second here. Okay. I was reading a study, this was probably 6 months ago, and they were looking at people that were 65 years old, and their bodies were basically toast at that point, meaning they have been all used up. They're in a very degenerated state, and they compared them against people that were 95, and they were still strong, and they could drive themselves to church, and they could get up and lead singing. maybe even barefooted.
There you go.
And they ask the question, what's the difference between a 95-year-old that can still function at a high level and take care of themselves and be productive and a 65-year-old that their bodies are essentially all used up and they can't survive and make it without drugs and surgery all the time? And you know what they came up with? And this really was astonishing to me. They said when they measured the immune function of the 95-year-old that made it that long, their immune system worked about 10% more efficiently or 10% better than the 65-year-old's body that couldn't heal and couldn't repair. But I'm telling you, when I read that, it was very encouraging to me because, you know, the number 10%, you start thinking, you know what? If I just try a little bit, I could probably easily do 10% better.
Right, right.
I guarantee you the 95-year-olds, they ain't living off ding-dongs, ho-hos, and Twinkies.
True that.
They're probably eating real food like avocados, blueberries, strawberries, calf liver, and onions, and T-bone steaks, and asparagus.
Watermelon?
Yes. You know what I demand that you do when you eat your watermelon?
Yeah.
You're going to put some salt on it.
Okay.
There was a study just the other day that, and I just laugh at these things. They said, we have found a new way to help athletes and people that exercise aggressively recover from their workouts so much better and faster. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to read this. What's the punchline? We're going to give them a slice of watermelon after a workout. I thought to myself, I think we knew that already if you would just pay attention to it. But yes.
We're going through about a watermelon every 2 days.
Well,
between two of them.
What if a person had horrible soreness or stiffness in their muscles? Well, watermelon, it has an amino acid called citrulline. Uh-huh. And that's been shown to help cleanse and wash them. You know, the thing of it is, if a person doesn't hydrate after a workout, the muscles do not grow. They just waste away.
I just need to quit eating it at night.
Well, if we sprinkle more salt on it, if it was a raw salt, such as Redmond sea salt or the unprocessed sea salt, Celtic.
Himalayan salt.
That's it. Now, the last time you were in the Himalayan mountains, did you bring much salt back or a lot or a little?
Well, as much as my backpack would carry.
Oh, that's quite impressive. I'm guessing 50 pounds. Is that close?
Did that sound good? Yeah.
Okay, that does sound good. That sounds impressive. And so, and those are the things that you're looking at doing, but okay, to overcome the toenail fungus, you got to starve the fungus, and you got to give the toe more oxygen. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Sounds like a plan.
But in that study I told you about, it's called ozonated sunflower oil.
Got it.
Okay.
I wrote that down.
I know I'm redundant, but I just thought maybe somebody else didn't hear it, and they need to hear it again.
I need that just to get it in my mind.
Okay.
And tomorrow you may talk about, because that's a concern, about monkeypox and not having to worry about taking the vaccine.
Well, you know what? We have what's
tomorrow
called a, we have, everybody has what's called a free will. They get to decide what they're going to do with their body.
Oh, yeah.
And I would be very, very concerned if a person says, you know what? I trust everybody. I trust this organization, that one. I'm going to take every vaccine known to man. I'm going to ask you just to reconsider that, and I want you to reconsider the concept of what's called natural immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you're going to have natural immunity is by feeding and nourishing your body in such a way where it says, thank you very much, now we can do our job.
Well, and that's what we're working on.
Good, 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 good.
Good. Hey, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your weekend. Appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you very much. Hope you have a great weekend, too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Okay, there's about 10 minutes left in the program, and the number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm fine, Dr. Morgan. I have a question to ask. My fiance has recently been put on statin. Atorvastatin, I think that's how you pronounce it, for cholesterol. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on it and the risk of it. And I'll hang up and listen to you on
All right. Thank you so much for your question and your phone call. I do appreciate you.
Sir.
Thank you.
Yes,
ma'am.
Thank you too.
Okay, bye.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Okay, I don't have the study directly in front of me, but I want to say that the latest studies show, well, let me say it this way. In the year 1994 or 1995, there was an article that was published, and they asked the question, they said, does taking a statin drug such as atorvastatin, does that do anything to prevent plaque from forming the arteries? And, of course, I read through the summary and got to the punchline or the abstract, and it was no. There's nothing that a statin drug does to prevent plaque from forming the arteries. And you would probably ask the question, well, why am I taking the drug then if it doesn't do that? Because isn't that what plaque's made of? Isn't it partly cholesterol? Well, the answer is true. Okay? The other study that I read maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, they said, and some of these numbers are just easy for my brain to remember. There's some things I don't remember well, but numbers are usually, that's my deal. I don't have a hard time with numbers or directions like some people I know. But anyway, they said that if you didn't have diabetes, there's a high probability you're going to get diabetes if you take the drug, the statin drug, for 7 years. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're going, well, why would I want to develop diabetes? Well, the answer is you don't. Your health is not magically better by developing diabetes. It makes every system in the body weaker. Just fill in the blank. You want your brain to become weaker? Well, diabetes will do that. Okay? The atorvastatin, this week, I saw a gentleman, and this is, I'm just quoting him. He said, I had to stop taking it because my legs became so weak and they began to hurt badly. So let me just float this idea. There's a condition called rhabdomyolysis. I know that's a big, long word. What it means is when you take the drug atorvastatin, in some people, it causes the skeletal muscles, and I'm talking about the muscles that make up your backbone and your hips, all those tough, strong, powerful muscles of your hip flexors and your hip extensors and your back strap. But they just begin to dissolve. What happens when you get chunks of dissolved skeletal muscle in your bloodstream? Well, it creates log jams. And when you have log jams, just like if a river gets filled with dirt and debris, the water doesn't flow so well. And you can't deliver oxygen. I'm telling you, folks, oxygen and water, or maybe two and salt, these might be the three greatest elements in all the universe. Even when the James Webb telescope is looking for a planet that might actually be able to sustain human life as we know it, they have to find water and they have to find salt. Of course, you know what water is? It's H2O. So you got two hydrogen molecules and one oxygen. There's your oxygen. What is salt? Sodium chloride. That you're a solar charged battery. If you want your cells to produce plenty of energy and you want to function at a high level, then you got to have salt. Now, if you drink water and it goes right through you, that means you're not absorbing it. So if you drink a bottle of water and it just goes right through you and you have to go to the restroom, that means you're lacking mineral electrolytes. So anyway, what I would ask you to do is Just go to Google and type in, can atorvastatin cause health problems? And you're going to find diabetes, cardiomyopathy. That means the moment you start taking it, there's damage to your heart muscle. And then when you start looking at dementia, global amnesia, that means you forget who you are and what you're doing. Pretty scary stuff. So I'm not saying there's not some benefits to it. But in comparison to developing, you get the disease called diabetes, so there's a high tendency toward that. But I'll let you make up your own mind. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Hi.
Thank you very much for your phone call. I really do appreciate you.
awesome. Okay, I need to find out how to, urination.
Did you say urinating?
Yes.
What do you mean about urinating? Urinating too much or too little?
Too much.
Okay. Well, what that means is one thing that could mean is when you drink water, you can't absorb it because you're deficient in salt. So one simple test that you could try starting today if you wanted to, if you had some pink Himalayan salt at the house or some sea salt, you could put a pinch in every glass of water. And that way you would see if the excessive urination goes away. Does that make sense? The other thing is, anytime a woman has excessive urination, you have to consider that she might have some type of a urinary tract or bladder infection.
Okay.
And those are really common. They actually sell a product that's made from cranberries called Azo. That's spelled A-Z-O. And you could probably get that at any pharmacy or large grocery store / pharmacy.
Right.
So even if you went to a large store today, they would probably have a section where they sell natural supplements and remedies. And there is a product called Azo. Of course, there's also cranberry capsules and cranberry juice and cranberry powder. And there's actually cranberries. And what the cranberry does, it prevents a type of a bacteria called E. coli from sticking to the lining of the bladder, causing a biofilm or an infection. So these are simple things that you could try right here. Now, I'm just going to tell you what I think. The hardest thing on the kidneys and the bladder of all time, that is white refined sugar. And so if you switch to eating, if you want sugar, why don't you have a blueberry or a cherry or a strawberry or an apple, or like the gentleman that just called, I think he preaches from the pulpit barefooted. I'm not really sure, but I think he does. But he eats watermelon all the time.
Okay.
Now, can I ask you a personal question? Would you trust a barefoot preacher?
Mm-hmm.
Me too. I think Jesus was probably barefoot at times. I mean, he talked about washing his disciples' feet, so they had to take their Converse sneakers off, didn't they?
Hmm.
I'm just joking about that. So, when there's frequent urination, sometimes that's a sign that you're low in vitamin B12. One of the ways to deal with that is just to eat liver once a week. So I know that your favorite restaurant probably makes liver tacos. And all you got to do is just cover them up with enough hot sauce, you won't even notice it's liver. Just keep the hot sauce flowing. What could go wrong with that plan?
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome. I hope I helped you today.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day. Enjoy your weekend.
You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Now, if you're urinating all night long, that would be misery. You might want to add just a little bit of baking soda to your first glass of water when you wake up. It could be as easy as a half a teaspoon. This program is Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan, and Lord willing, I will be back here next week at 7 o'clock in the morning. And just remember, God has given you everything that you need to heal, but we may have to work on tapping into that.